Welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Hi, Larry Mueller here. And you know what? There are some beautiful native plants that are at their peak in the fall. And we're going to be talking about them on this edition of Garden Talk with our guest, Susan Carpenter, back with us once again. She's the senior outreach specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum. So we'll talk about adding some fall flowering native plants to your garden. And of course, she'll be taking your native gardening questions as well. So I hope you'll join in. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Send us an email to ideas@wpr.org. And Susan Carpenter, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Great to be here. Thanks, Larry.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's start by talking about the Arboretum and what goes on there for those who aren't familiar with it.
Okay, well, the Arboretum is a 1,200-acre area right here in the middle of Madison, and we're a teaching and research center of the university. So we have also a great deal of, besides our research and teaching, more formal teaching, we have visitor areas and a lot of visitor amenities, so trails, visitor center and so forth, gardens, right there near the visitor center. So lots to see and lots to do there.
No, absolutely. I'm wondering, you know, all the rain we've had in southern Wisconsin, at least, has it had an effect on the Arboretum?
Right. Well, recently we, on Monday, the storm on Monday, we had 6 inches of rain. We have our own weather station there, so we know that. And so we do have some trails that are closed, a lot of the low-lying areas. We do have temporary signage up in those cases, and we would just ask people for their safety and health to follow the directions on those signs. Don't go past barricades. Some of our trails have been washed out a bit. This is a damage that we have to get to fixing. And so if those trails aren't closed, we ask people to be very cautious with those and not go beyond any barricades or anything like that. Conditions can change really quickly.
Sure.
So we want people to avoid the flooded areas. And so when people visit, there is a map in the visitor center that's updated with trail closures, so they can get all that information right there in the visitor center.
What areas of the Arboretum are kind of at their best in the fall?
Well, wow. As we get into fall color, we've got the prairies, which are really beautiful in the fall with all the grasses and the different late blooming species. But also the woods are just terrific. Our maple woods, they turn kind of a golden color. You can just be in there
beautiful
with that golden light.
Yeah, it's
and then our
beautiful
gardens, of course. Our horticultural collection has a lot of variety in it. So we have a lot of different different species there, lots of different things to see. And a few tours coming up in the horticultural garden as well as the native plant garden in September and October.
And we'll talk about some of those as we go along through the show today. But I want to give our listeners a chance to join in. If you have a question for Susan Carpenter, as we talk with her about late summer native flowers, I hope you'll join in. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, or email us at ideas@wpr.org. Let's take a call. Pam in Kellogg, Minnesota, up now.
Good morning.
Pam, yeah, thanks for calling, Pam.
I was wondering, I've heard some native plants can be planted in the fall. I know the butterfly weed, I was going to do that one year, needs to be put on a moist napkin and put in the fridge for a while. So I was wondering, could milkweed and some of the asters and butterfly, I was wondering actually for a list of several that could be just planted now and then kind of forgotten.
Forgotten about till next year, okay.
Well, if you're are you talking about planting seeds or planting plants?
Seeds, yeah.
Seeds, okay. Yes, most of our, most of the seeds, as you can collect them as they're ripening, you know, as the, for example, with your milkweeds, as those pods begin to split open, you can get the seeds out. And most of our forbs or flowering plants do need a cold, moist treatment. So you don't have to do that yourself. If you take the seeds after they're produced by the plant and simply plant them, put them into contact with soil wherever you want them growing, at this time of year in the fall, then you'll have them, they'll go through winter, and winter will provide the cold, moist treatment that they need. And in the spring, they should germinate.
wondering, is this a good time? I'm just thinking, well, what if they start to grow now? Maybe it's a little early, or is it not?
Well, they're the flowering plants, or the ones that do require that cold treatment, they won't germinate now.
Okay. They won't germinate anyway. Mm-hmm. Okay. So you don't have to worry about that.
If you're going to plant grasses, they don't have that requirement for the most part. So you could wait till later on that. Wait until like into November when you don't have conditions where they would germinate. So I would wait on grass seeds. But the flower seeds, we don't even have our aster seeds. They haven't even bloomed yet, or mostly so. As we get those seeds in, we can go ahead and plant those flower seeds.
Pam, does that help out?
Would that help with? Would that work with echinacea too?
Yep.
Okay. All right. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Sure. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Let's go to Carrie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Carrie.
Hi. My question is about aspens. I'm a landscape architect, and I see it in the Milwaukee, the southern Wisconsin area, and also in northern Wisconsin where I am now. And that is, they're turning a kind of a rusty color. They seem like they have some sort of a disease. I'm wondering if you know if that is something that's threatening to the species this year, or just exactly what that is. And will that prohibit the beautiful yellow fall color that we're used to.
Well, that was quaking aspen. Yeah.
I'm not sure. I haven't seen that myself yet. And ideally, I would be asking our tree expert at the Arboretum, our curator in the horticultural collection. One thing you could do is send that question in to the info@address at the Arboretum, and he would it would get referred to him. I know that I had some aspen in the garden, one in particular that just turned. It just turned brown, not that rusty color, just plain brown. And it did die last year, but I don't know on the rusty turn. I would expect that they won't turn yellow.
Yeah, and if so UW Arboretum, go there online.
Yeah, we have an info, just our contact page, and you can easily send that question in.
All right. Mm-hmm. There you go, Carrie. Thanks a lot for calling. Sometimes, too, the UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic. So the UW-Madison Plant Disease Diagnostic Clinic, even a photo along with a question is good.
Yes.
Yeah. There you go, Carrie. Thank you. Let's go to Graham in the township of Vienna. Hi, Graham.
Hi. My question is, how late can plugs be planted without being affected by frost heave, specifically prairie plants?
Okay, that's a great question. We have had good success with planting them even as late as into September. And the reason is that the soils stay warmer longer than the air does if we have a, you know, cooling through the fall. So there is a fair amount of time for root development to happen in the fall. Now, you may get some frost heaving depending on the difference between the soils that you're plugs are in and the soils that you're putting them in. So, for example, if you're putting potting soil into clay, there could be some frost heaving that you would notice next, say, March. And what I have had good success with on that is simply resetting those plants in March. But you don't normally see that. There's usually time for the roots to get established now before fall really sets in.
All right. Sounds good. Thanks, Graham, for calling. Appreciate it. Marty in Douglas County, we'll go to you next. Hi, Marty.
Well, this is sort of an extension of the last question. Would September be too late to plant a couple of maple trees in northwestern Wisconsin?
Yeah, you're way up north. I would say plant them as soon as possible.
I'd get them in the ground tomorrow. This afternoon would be all right.
Right away. Yeah, you want to give them enough time to get established before winter really sets in. So it does matter to some extent where we are, which zones we're in the state.
Marty, do you have them now, or were you planning to buy some and put them in?
Well, we we plan on buying them because, you know, it's getting to the point where they're at nice prices.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, so there's, could we overwinter trees in pots somehow if we were to buy them now? Otherwise, good heavens, we can certainly wait. It isn't like,
Okay. Yeah, I guess I would, if you can do it very soon, there'd be no problem with doing it this fall. If you have to wait, you know, if you were talking about maybe waiting until November, then I would wait till next spring. I wouldn't try to overwinter them over in the pots. I don't think you'd have as good a success with that.
First week in September, what is the tender loving care we need to show them until it snows?
Water, for one.
Well, if you don't have if you have a dry period, so if you're not getting an inch of rain per week, you do want to water them. It depends on how dry or, you know, the conditions of your soil. So if you're in a low-lying area and the soil's consistently moist, you wouldn't need to add too much water. But you do want to keep the root zone moist. So whatever will accomplish that. And then, possibly mulch them a little bit and then look for those leaves next spring.
And by watering, you know, don't give up the end of October if it's still, I mean, you should, they like to go into the winter in a good shape, water-wise.
You just want to really watch the weather in that first year. This also applies to next spring. Should you get a dry spring, you want to keep that first year that you have the tree in, you really want to be paying attention to making sure that it has a good moisture to get established well.
There you go, Marty. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. Talking with Susan Carpenter about late summer flowers, native flowers, and native plants in general with her. And join in, 800-642-1234. Dan in Lamartine, your turn. Hi, Dan.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. This isn't a question about a native plant, but I have a hydrangea bush that we'd like to relocate, and I'm not sure when the best time to do that. It's full bloom now, but I don't want to do anything now.
Right. Right. I don't think you want – the general rule of thumb is any plant that's in active blooming, it's not a good time to move it. And this actually – the Arboretum has a spectacular display of hydrangeas. We have so many new specimens that have gone in over the past few years. It's just lovely. And this is another really great question for our curator over there, because I have never transplanted a hydrangea. I know they planted many of them in the spring when the new material came in. I haven't seen them planting any at this time of year due to them all being in beautiful bloom. So
I'd be a little concerned about plant, you know, if you wait till after they're done blooming, there might not be enough
time.
Yeah,
I might wait until spring for that. How big is the plant?
It's about 4 to 5 feet tall.
Okay, yeah. So you're talking about probably pruning back and then moving it. It's a substantial size plant already.
Yeah, I'd be tempted to wait till spring.
Yep. I would wait till spring.
There you go, Dan. Thank you very much for calling. And lots of callers online. You can join in, 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller with my guest, Susan Carpenter from the UW-Madison Arboretum. Jill Nadeau, our producer today. Sarah Hopeful, our engineer here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at native plants today with our guest, Susan Carpenter from the UW-Madison Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk, zeroing in on those late summer flowering natives, but we'll take some other native plant questions as well with her at 1-800-642-1234. Let's take another call. Artie in St. Paul, I guess it's your turn. Hi, Artie.
Hi. Thanks, Larry and Susan. I'm wondering when the best time is to trim I've got some yellow birch and some poplar trees that I'd like to trim. And is it okay to trim them in the fall?
I would wait until it's pretty cold, so maybe late fall. You're in St. Paul, so that maybe won't be too long. But you want to do it when they're dormant, and also avoid a lot of the trees. We want to avoid season when insect pests would still be active. So I don't know of any particular concerns with the birch and poplars on that, but I would just wait until they're in dormant condition.
Yeah, sometimes birch leaf miner could maybe be an issue.
And birches tend to drop they tend to self-prune a lot, so you can pick up a lot of little branches along the way. But for pruning, I would wait.
Ralph in Bayfield. Hi, Ralph.
Hi. I have a comment for the caller about his aspen.
Oh, sure.
And the aspen, certainly birch leaf miner. I worked for the Forest Service for 30 years. Certainly that can affect both aspen and birch. And I've seen trees killed by that. Epidemics usually follow about three events, drought and then insect infestations and stuff. But also, we are in the middle. I'm up here by Bayfield, and we are in the middle of a very severe drought. I see aspen right out my window here. I see birch out my window here with a lot of yellow leaves. That is not fall.
Yeah. it's the dry period, maybe coupled with some birch leaf miner.
For that to get down into the roots.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And we will have some mortality based on that.
Mm-hmm. Ralph, thanks a lot. Yeah, appreciate that call. And it's so wet in southern Wisconsin, we forget that there's other parts of the state that are pretty dry. Door County's pretty dry, too, as I've been told. Let's go to Mary Jean in Fox City. Hi, Mary Jean.
Hi, how are you?
Great, appreciate the call. What can we do for you?
Great. We've got a large property with a lot of maple saplings on it, and we'd like to transplant one. I don't know what kind of maples they are, but I wonder how deep do their roots go. It probably depends on the exact type.
They're pretty shallow-rooted for the most part.
Yeah, probably depends on the size of the sapling, too. How big is it?
Well, there's some that are as small as, like, my index finger and some, quite large.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Those sound pretty small. Transplanting a smaller tree, it doesn't have as much shock as transplanting a larger one. And you might find in the long run that transplanting a smaller one would lead you to a bigger tree in a few years than, it would catch up, is what I'm trying to say. So you might try it with the smaller ones and see that they take. That would obviously be less stress on the tree. And then, go from there. Sounds like you've got a lot to choose from.
Yeah, and they're pretty shallow rooted.
Mm-hmm.
So there's not a taproot, if I'm not mistaken.
It's not like an oak tree where you really have or it's establishing with a deeper root.
Mm-hmm. There you go, Mary Jean. Thank you for calling. And let's go to Jim in Winnebago County next. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Hi, Susan. This is your old grad student. We have up here, and we're having a hard time finding people to burn it. And last night, Dick Nicolai was saying that fall burns. I know sometimes that the arboretum does fall burns. I'm wondering what the arboretum is on fall versus spring burning, and whether or not fall burning will take care of things like buckthorn elms and dogwoods and willows that are moving into some of the wetter areas.
Okay. So you were breaking up a little bit, but I think we've got the whole gist of it, Jim. Thanks so much. What's better, spring or fall burning, and will fall burning have an impact on some of those nasty plants?
Yeah, it sounds like your question's kind of focused in on how would the fire most effectively help you control those woody plants that are coming into the prairie. And the answer to that is, of course, not very simple, because the woody plants, if they're well established and they're clonal or you know, have seeded through an area, depending on which type of shrub it is, they can eliminate the fuel that really makes the fire hot, and they don't. So fire doesn't necessarily can't necessarily reverse a very large number or very large coverage of shrubs. We do some fall burns at the Arboretum on occasion, but the majority of our burns are usually that late, you know, early spring, late winter burns, the dormant season. So we have found a combination of strategies works well with those heavily infested shrub areas, which include mowing the shrubs, include treating the shrubs, and then burning as well. So fire alone will not reverse a heavy, heavy shrub infestation.
All right. Does that help out, Jim?
Yeah, it sure does. I wouldn't say that the shrub infestation is heavy. It's just we've got some things coming in that we really don't want, and including Phragmites.
Oh, yeah, you definitely want to be rid of that.
Mm-hmm.
If you can. Phragmites is something we're actually going to be talking about soon. I think we've got a show coming up on invasives. But fall versus spring, typically for you, spring is works
well, that,
better.
That's it. Typically is when we do that, but well, some of that has to do with just the crew and the staffing and and the conditions of the sites that we're doing. One thing we did find out with the shrubs, or the research found out with the shrubs, is that, for example, dogwood, those areas were burned, the dogwood was shorter, a little bit shorter the next year, but it had more stems. So it didn't accomplish, you know, the goal that you might be hoping for, which is to really reduce the shrub layer. So that's why I'm asking or suggesting a combined approach to the shrub control.
Yeah, there you go, Jim. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And we will take another call. Gil in Wind Lake, your turn. Hi, Gil.
Hi, how you doing?
Good. Appreciate the call.
Thank you. I got a question. Is it too late in the season to plant? I wanted to plant a pin oak. I wonder if I should wait till spring, or is it okay now? And also, I was looking at, I wanted to plant a pear tree, a fruit tree. I wonder if it's too late in the year, or should I wait?
Well, if you're, I don't know when you're exactly planning to plant the trees, but we just were talking about this earlier, where if you can plant it pretty soon, it would have time to establish some root system before winter sets in. The fruit tree, I'm not as sure about. I think that might be best to wait until spring on that.
All right, there we go. And on to Carly in St. Paul, Minnesota. Hi, Carly.
Hi, thank you for taking the call. I have somewhat of a million-dollar question. I have a rather small yard, and I'd like to attract more bees, but I also have a major squirrel problem. Is there some magical flowering plant that might discourage squirrels but attract bees?
Do you have trouble with the squirrels digging or...
Yeah, they dig, they nip off the leaves and the flowers.
Wow, squirrels? Okay.
They're vicious.
Wow. Okay, well, there are lots of plants that would work really well for pollinators. This is one of my favorite topics. So, but at this time of year, the things that are being... the plants that are being used the most. If you have a small area, you maybe are looking to keep your plants a little bit shorter. Some of the anise hyssop is really popular with pollinators right now. We have asters coming into bloom, so those are really great for the fall pollinators. If you really want with pollinators to attract pollinators, you really want to have things blooming all throughout the season. But at this time of year, of course, the things we're seeing are the showy goldenrod is coming into bloom, some of the other special goldenrods like Riddell's goldenrod. And so what you really want to do is make sure that the plants that you're choosing are suited exactly to your site. In other words, if you have very dry soils, you want to have plants that are adapted to that.
What works the best on dry soils?
Well, on dry soils, we have some asters that would work very well. And smaller plants tend to be the plants that we see in the dry soils because they're the soils are well drained, so the plants don't necessarily get that tall. Showy goldenrod will work on dry soil as well as a mesic soil. And thinking about earlier in the season, the prairie clovers are terrific on dry soils.
And as far as the squirrels go, they're pretty much impossible to eliminate from an area. I know one person who said about eliminating squirrels from an area from his lawn, and I think over the course of a few years trapped out about 300, and they were still just as many as there were before.
Right. They tend to come back where they live.
Or just new ones move
yes,
in.
Yes, and new ones move in.
So I'm not sure. With bulbs, sometimes you can cover bulbs.
Right. I haven't noticed too much. We have many ground squirrels and chipmunks in our native plant garden. And in the connection to pollinators there is those little burrows that they're digging are actually used by the bumblebees for nesting sites. So we're pretty happy to see them scrambling around in the garden. But we have a pretty large garden, so I know at home it's harder.
Yeah, Carly, I does that help?
It does. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, let's see. Let's go to Barb in Mondovi next. Hi, Barb.
Good morning.
Morning.
Morning. What's on your mind?
Well, I'm in the process, or I've been doing some transitioning in my perennial beds to using a lot more native plants, and they're doing very, very well. And as you know, a lot of them will seed or spread, you know, through their roots and things. And I'm wondering if I can divide them, you know, dig them up and divide, and when I should do that. I'm just wondering how deep the roots are, you know, are, and if I can, you know, move a native plant. So the ones that I'm concerned about, I have wild senna, one of the cassias, and great blue lobelia, and jopai weed.
Okay. So two of those are really big, the senna and the jopai weed. One thing I've noticed for both of those is that they self-seed very easily. So one thing you can do is you can actually collect seed and put it where you want them. And it won't take too long for those to grow up into mature plants. For the lobelia, it tends to be, each individual plant, in my experience, tends to be kind of short-lived. But as there's bare soil in the area, it seeds itself. So those seeds on the lobelia are very, very tiny. You might want to take a look at them in those capsules, and they will, so you can scatter those around too. You can dig the plants up and divide them, and generally for the plants that you've mentioned, I would recommend doing that in the spring. But you know, you can do a combination of seeding. Another thing you can do is you can collect seed from your plants and seed them in a flat or little pots in a tray, and just leave those trays out over the winter. And then and be sure you mark what's what. And then in the spring, you can bring those out and they'll germinate, and you'll know what you have, and you could put those plants out. And I've done that quite a few times and had good results with that.
All right. Thanks, Barb. Appreciate your call. Just to kind of go along with what Barb was asking about, Peg on Lake de Bay emailed to say she planted a number of native flowers last fall. Now she has to move them because of some changes, you know, to accommodate landscape changes. Possible to move them in terms of, you know, when's the best time to do it? Well, she has to move them, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Now is, you know, sooner than later. But can she keep them temporarily relocated until a permanent home is ready next spring?
Well, that would be possible. What I usually try to do is get them to their permanent home. If I have to move them once, I like to move them once. And we've had that situation before with construction around the visitor center. We did come back. We didn't try to move the plants back. It depends on the size of the plant, but if the plant we say you have a big bunch grass, something like that, you can just dig it up and you can just cut it in two or three or four pieces if it's large enough, and you can put those small ones, you could just heel them in if you have a space that you could get them next spring and move them. Kind of depends on the timing of everything, really. If you move it to a new place and it gets established there, then you've got a big job bringing it back. And some plants might not make it. Some of the legumes might have a very deep taproot. So, for example, lead plant, something like that, might not make the transition well. So, again, that combination of seeds and trying to transplant would probably be the best option.
Yeah. Let's go to Zoltan in Sheboygan next. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hello, thank you for taking my question. And I planted a pine tree about 10 years ago in a small backyard. And in its 8 years, it was exposed to some dogs, four dogs.
Okay.
And that healthy pine tree lost over 50% of its healthy leaves and branches, and about less than 50% is still okay, so healthy. What can I expect from this pine tree?
So the dogs chewed off the bottom branches?
Kind of urinated on the tree and whatever dogs can do to that tree. By the time I noticed it, over 50% of the tree died, the branches and the leaves.
Okay.
Pine tree.
It sounds like it might be, it might not be just about the dogs.
Right.
It may be that this tree has another issue. So pines, if it's a pine tree, it creates new needles in the spring. So one thing you might watch for this tree is to see if it does that next spring. Then those needles stay on the tree for a whole year until the end of the following fall when those particular needles would drop off. And meanwhile, new needles have come on. So that's why the pine should have needles, a good crop of needles on it all the time. If it doesn't, if it's just declining, then 50% is gone now. Yeah. I think it sounds pretty dire for that tree.
Yeah, pretty dire. And you can, on some of those branches where there aren't any needles left, you can kind of dig in with your fingernail and see if there's any live tissue under there. I'm betting there isn't.
It sounds like it's probably declining for a different reason and possibly would be removed. How big is it?
It's about six footer.
Okay. Yeah, you might want to start with a new tree next year.
Yeah, it's not good. And you may want to actually do a soil test right there before you put one back in there, because maybe there's something going on with the soil that is not good for the tree.
It seems like in 10 years if the conditions were good for it in that location, it would be bigger than it is.
Yeah,
as well.
6 feet isn't very big for that many years.
So you might see what the soil conditions are there before you replace that tree.
Yeah, there we go. Thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. There is there was a question about grasses. You mentioned grasses earlier. Muriel in Spring Green emailed to say Indian grass is taking over her prairie. She loves it, but in smaller amounts, and it's overpowering everything else. She's been doing spring burns for several years. Would it help to... do a fall burn. There we go.
Okay, that is a great question. I know lots of people who would love to have more Indian grass. But you're right, Muriel. This is doing spring burns or those late winter burns successively does tend to favor warm season grasses. So Indian grass is a warm season grass. It has its growing, its major growing time is in the summer, and it blooms. It's blooming now at this time of year.
Yeah.
So a warm season grass is favored by that kind of burn. So one thing you can do is you could, if it's possible for you not to burn the prairie in the spring, that would tend to favor, or would, it would not favor the grass as much. So the other plants would have, you know, would have more of a chance. It depends on the, it depends on the composition of your prairie. If you have mostly Indian grass and very little other species, then, then the Indian grass is probably the predominant plant. So if you did a fall burn, the fall burns do tend to not favor the warm season grasses as well, because it's hitting them right now or soon.
Yeah.
And it removes some of, probably removes some of the seeds as well from those. So you might try it, or sure, you might just try giving up a spring burn if that's possible.
Yeah. And it's probably one of those things you'd probably want to do it a couple, you have, let's say you're going to do a fall burn, you might want to do it a couple of years in a row.
Yeah, you can, it's a good idea to mix up the, keep the burning less predictable, I guess is the way I would put it.
Yeah, to put it. Okay. Great. Thank you for that question, Mike, and who lives near the Wisconsin River. It's your turn.
Oh, hi there. I'm driving down 94 right now, and I'm noticing a lot of this green, bright green vine that's growing over fences and trees and all sorts of stuff, and I don't know what it is.
It's wild cucumber.
Yeah, it has has white flowers that kind of stick up on, like, stick up into the air. Is that...
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So that's wild cucumber, and it's surprisingly, for how much you see of it, it's an annual plant. So each of those vines is growing from a seed every year, and there's been a lot of questions about it this year. So if you look carefully at them, you can see a stalk of white flowers. Those are the male flowers, and underneath the stalk, a little fruit at this time, which is like a little, kind of a little golf ball sized cucumber, if you will. And it is, that's where the seeds are held there. So it is, it's going to produce more seeds. The only way that it can grow is from seed each year. So sometimes we see a lot of it. Sometimes we don't see very much of it. This year is a big year.
Yeah, this year happens to be a big year. I think to some extent, if there's some, if there's a kind of a bad spring where you get some open ground, some other plants die, that leaves room for the wild cucumber to get in.
It really does well with moisture.
Yeah.
And we had such, at least in our area, we had a lot of moisture early on. So I think a lot of the seeds germinated, they got growing, and now we're seeing the result.
Yeah, but it's everywhere, isn't it, Mike?
Yeah, it is. I thought it was like kudzu of the north, but I'm glad it's not.
No, fortunately, we do not yet have kudzu in Wisconsin, and hopefully we never get it. But there's a lot of wild cucumber right now. Thanks for that call. Appreciate it. We are visiting today with Susan Carpenter. She is the Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Taking a look at native plants today here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with Susan Carpenter from the UW-Madison Arboretum. Great to have you listening in. Give a call if you have a question or comment. The number is 1-800-642-1234. We got an open line. Get you on pretty quickly. Gary in Boscobel, thanks for calling.
Thanks, Larry. I'd like to make a comment to the caller from Spring Green that had the Indian grass problem in her prairie planting.
Yeah.
I've been doing prairie conservation and restoration work for about 43 years, almost exclusively on virgin sites, native sites, rather than plantings. But these big grasses, in my opinion, offer a very aggressive posture once they get started in these prairie plantings. And, of course, the Indian grass and the big bluestem are both rhizomatous. So I'm suspicious that this climate change is starting to make these grasses really become more and more dominant. They've had lots of water and lots of moisture, and there's lots of carbon in the atmosphere, and some of these plantings have big bluestem that's 8, 10, 12 feet high, and the stuff is spreading like wildfire. So I keep telling anybody that I consult with, and absolutely don't put any big grasses in your plantings until the planting has been established for, well, at least 5, 6, maybe even 10 years, because these big grasses will really take over and they will really eliminate all your four species in there over time. So I just wanted to put that out.
Gary, thanks a lot for calling. And he's right on the money there, isn't he?
Yeah, well, that's actually a good strategy for plants that you find aggressive. Sometimes when you do a planting or seeding, you have certain species you'll see in abundance early on, and then they'll decrease in abundance later. But an example that I had in the native plant garden, it's run its course now, but I would have, when we planted our dry mesic prairie garden, I would have held back on planting the white sage until the garden was established, if I had that to do over again, and then put the white sage in. But now 10 years later, it's settled down a bit and it isn't so prevalent. But at first, we just thought it was going to take over the whole thing.
And isn't it true that depending if you plant, let's say, fall versus a spring planting, that fall planting will favor one type of plants versus the other, versus the grasses?
Well, if you're seeding, and you put your mix down and you have a mixture of forbs and grasses, if you put it down in the spring, then the forbs haven't had their cold, moist treatment. So they wait until the following year to germinate after they've gone through a winter, assuming that the chipmunks haven't eaten them all, and birds, and then the grasses would germinate right away. So if you plant in the fall, you have everything, like in November later, you have everything germinating that first spring, hopefully.
So the forbs have a better chance,
I guess, yeah. And it is true that those tall grasses will, for example, the arboretum, they seed into other areas where we didn't plant them. And what we've done in cases like that where we can't really use fire at all, we don't use fire at all, we just trim them all the way down. And that weakens them.
Sure.
And, gives the other plants a chance around them. So that's one
strategy
on a tiny scale that you can do.
Mm-hmm. All right. Let's go to Mary in Pewaukee. Hi, Mary.
Well, thank you. Yes, I had two things. One is a comment that I heard from someone, because we all hate those Japanese beetles. The 4 o'clock plant, if planted in the spring, maybe your guest can verify, but if the Japanese beetles eat on that plant, if it's near and around the area of the yard where, they like to feed on most of our plants anyway, that will kill them if they start eating the 4 o'clock. Is that true? And my second thing is a kind of question or suggestion from you. If you can advise, we call it the back 40, but it's only 40 feet by 40 feet. And it's grass for the most part, and something is creeping in that's actually a very pretty green leaf. And I kind of would like that to continue, and I'd like to stop having to mow that area. So I like the idea of prairie, but with the grass, what's the best way? Is there any relatively simple way to transform it into a prairie-type area with a lot of flowers and low-growing,
Okay. So your first question about the 4 o'clocks, I don't know the answer to that question. We do have Japanese beetles in our garden, of course, because their life cycle involves them developing in the ground and underground, and then they emerge mid-season or so, and they fly around for a while eating things and mating, and then by this time they've been laying their eggs underground again and are kind of past their peak for this year. I'd notice with the native plants, there are not too many native plants that they focus on, so we don't get a lot of damage overall in the garden from them. But I don't know anything about the 4 o'clocks and whether that would work or not to discourage them.
Sarah was just doing a little searching, and it seems to be folk wisdom of using 4 o'clock flowers for Japanese beetles. At least that's one of the responses we're getting online.
Mm-hmm. But the other question about stopping mowing grass and how to get some native planting established, it is important to, I mean, if you have just things moving in that you like and that you want to propagate, that's fine. They might not necessarily be native plants. You may just be seeing whatever, you know, seed sources are around there. A lot of times in lawns, violets come in and just kind of take over the lawn, and that's a certainly, those are usually native plants, so you could do that. But generally, what is done with the lawn is to actually convert the turf grass over to a planting or a seeding. And it's important to prepare the area well, because otherwise you just end up with a mixture of, say, lawn grass and quack grass and other non-natives mixed in with your native species, and you might not be as happy with those results. So there are nice resources. Some of the native plant nurseries have a full, have a full set of guidelines for going about that transition. And there's lots of resources for species that would be suitable for your conditions of soil, light, if it's on a slope, which way the slope points, south or north. So you'd want to design your planting so that you'd have a good success with it.
All right. There we go. Thank you so much for calling. Colleen in Cumberland, your turn. Hi, Colleen.
Hi. I have a question about Purpose Prairie, where we moved to. As far as upkeep, burning isn't really an option for us, and we don't really have access to a baler. I'm wondering if mowing it with a vac mower would be beneficial, or if there's something else you could tell us as far as caring for it.
How big is the area, Colleen?
It's probably maybe 8 acres.
Okay. So people generally, with burning not being an option, then mowing is another option. And so I guess in this situation, I would recommend that. And you probably don't want to mow it if you're interested in, supporting pollinators and supporting other animals. For example, if you have any ground nesting birds there, you wouldn't want to mow it during the nesting season at all. So be mindful of that when you're planning your mowing. We have areas at the Arboretum Prairie Gardens there that we can't burn because they're too close to the building. And we just trim down in the spring when the plant, just before the plants are coming up or just as they're starting to come up for the new year, we just trim down and get that material off the beds so that the plants can see the sunlight and get started growing again. So that's just an option that we use there. But, mowing might be your best bet.
Yeah, it makes some sense to me as well. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You have the Native by Design Gardening Conference coming up and almost full.
That's right. Yes, our registration has gone very swiftly this year. So we do have a couple of spaces left in that conference. It's an all-day conference on September 16th focused on native plant gardening. So we have design, planting and maintaining. We have workshops on invasive earthworms. We have beneficial insects, and then also gardening for butterflies and moths, and then a native plant garden tour. So it includes lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That's great. And it's held there right at the Arboretum. Registration is available online.
And so just go to the UW-Madison Arboretum.
Our Arboretum website, yep.
And that's September 16th.
Mm-hmm.
Dolores in Cedarburg, do you have a quick question for us?
Yes, I do. I had an area along my tree line. I live in the woods, cleaned out, had the ash trees taken out. There is one low area where the trees were removed, and, of course, wild stuff is growing up. I intend to have maybe no mold grass put in there. There's a little ravine. I'll have some rocks put in there. Does that sound like a good idea?
Is it an area that gets a lot of drainage?
It's damp quite a bit, but when it's dry, it's really dry.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm having a swale cut around the backyards to divert the water more to that culvert over there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
It sounds like you probably want to, if possible, it sounds like you want, if it's an edge habitat, it would be good to get some plants that would be able to hold the soil for you. So perhaps some shade sedges that would do well in some semi-shaded area, or grasses like bottlebrush grass or Canada rye. Those might work well. Maybe some flowers like Joe Pye weed, if you can, if height isn't an issue, or some shade-loving goldenrods like zigzag goldenrod.
Oh, that sounds like a good plan as well. Dolores, good luck with that. Appreciate your call. Susan Carpenter, our guest. She is the senior outreach specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum. And just a reminder, a couple of spots left for the Arboretum Native Plant Gardening Conference on September 16th. I'm Larry Mueller for Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. You're listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We're taking a look at native plantings today with our guest, Susan Carpenter, the senior outreach specialist at the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden in the UW-Madison Arboretum. So, what native plants are looking great in your garden right now? Questions? Give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. Email us at ideas@wpr.org, and we have open lines. Get you on really quickly. And Susan, before we got some email questions here, but you have a story to tell about your rain garden. All the water that we've had has created some problems, but maybe not in the rain garden.
Well, it's an interesting case. We have two rain gardens within the native plant garden, and the larger one is about 30 yards in diameter. It's kind of a round basin, and it's in the back of the building. So it gets the water from at least half of the roof of that large visitor center on that side of the building. So with the 6 inches of rain on Monday, Tuesday morning, the rain garden was full to the brim. And then Wednesday morning, it had dropped down 12 inches. And this is because it's soaking into the ground, and also the plants, some of the plants are still pretty actively transpiring and using moisture, releasing it to the atmosphere. And on Thursday, it was down another 12 inches. And this morning when I went out, before I came over to the studio, it was just damp. I mean, I'm sure it was still muddy, but it was just damp. And then the rain was starting again. So it just made me realize that, not everyone would have a large, large rain garden like that, but it's set away from the building as we would advise for a rain garden to be set. And ours is fairly deep and large, but any rain garden can serve to hold the water on the site away from your foundation and then infiltrate the water. And that was quite a bit of water that wasn't running down into the lake and leading to flooding further downstream.
I have some friends who put in a rain garden, and they live on a hill. It's just kind of sloping down right toward the lake.
Mm-hmm.
And I noticed that the rain garden did a very nice job this week capturing the water and keeping it from just running into the lake.
Yep. We didn't have any erosion around there either. That's another important thing that rain gardens will do, slow down the flow and prevent erosion.
Well, let's take some more calls here. Let's go to Sean in Cornucopia next. Hi, Sean.
Hi, Larry. I've got a small grove of white oaks that I started from acorns, and they're now about 3 or 4 years old, anywhere from a foot to 2.5 feet tall. And is there anything I need to do to kind of protect them over the winter, protect them from animals, cold? I don't know.
Probably you don't have to worry about cold. If they're just that short, you might want to put a little fence around them just to protect them from an animal like a rabbit or something that might come and either chew on it or nip it. That would just be temporary, you know, a temporary little fencing for them. We get little oak seedlings coming up all over the place, and they do really well. They grow pretty fast. So people who are concerned about planting a small oak, it'll become a big oak in a pretty short time,
pretty short,
really, if it's planted in a good location.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I just protect them a little bit from hungry animals over the winter.
Yeah, I think that's great advice. Good luck, Sean. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Fred emailed to say he put several acres into wildflowers 34 years ago through the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Program. Then this fall, he has a great crop of goldenrod. He didn't cut or burn in the early spring this year. Is his wildflower experiment over, Dad?
Well, I guess to answer that question or to discuss that, it would be good to know how did it look over these 34 years. Did it go through, you know, any planting is going to go through kind of an evolution of development over time, as I was mentioning before. If the goldenrod is Canada goldenrod and it's pretty much solid and there's not a lot of other species, that would be something that I would be interested in about this question too. Because a lot of times when we look at an area, what catches our eye is what's in bloom, what's tallest. And if we don't look critically at the area at other times of year, we might be missing the fact that earlier in the season, it was maybe full of some other plant that's, you know, sort of part of this annual cycle. Canada goldenrod is very aggressive, and it does tend to take over, spread by rhizomes and seed well, and it can take over areas. We generally in the native plant garden are working to either reduce it or to discourage it by pulling it. We've been doing a bunch of that this summer. It does tend to take over. So it might be too soon to say if the wildflower experiment is over, but I would look at that site at different times of year and see what the diversity is, and then maybe do some like burn in the fall and or early spring and seed with other species, some grasses that would grow, germinate right away, or other species that, put in other species that would get, like forbs that would have that, you know, put them in the fall so that you'd see a little more. You might try to rejuvenate it a bit.
Yeah, that makes sense. Good luck with that. Thank you for that email. And Robin in Portage, it's your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi, good afternoon. My question is, and I heard what Neil DeBoe said last week, I believe, about trying to eradicate garlic mustard, but I wanted to hear your guest's take on it.
Okay, well, what is your situation of garlic mustard? Is it solid stands of it or just interspersed with other plants that you want to protect?
Well, I'd like to get it out of my woods, number one, because it's spreading like crazy. My neighbors won't do anything about it.
Mm-hmm.
I have worked on it in the past and pulled and pulled and pulled, and it did clear out an area, but It comes back eventually,
mm-hmm.
and it just keeps spreading to mm-hmm. other areas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think in areas where there's not much of it, the main thing to do, and I have situations like this myself, is to, there's always single large plants that are the beginning of an infestation of an area, and get those big ones out where they're, you know, so scan over the area, go through it, and get those big plants out before they create a whole army of little plants. And then if you have a high quality woods there, you don't want to be treating it where you'd get the, you know, where that, where, or spraying it where you would be affecting the native plants nearby. So hand pulling is really the way to go in those situations. I know it's discouraging because it just seems like you're in an endless battle, but vigilance is the main tool we have for preventing, you know, it getting started. I've had areas where I've cleared it out of woods and come back the next year and there'll be just a few. So I flag areas in the woods and go back to them and make sure that I've really cut down on the reproductives. The seedlings, of course, now from this year, they aren't going to bloom until next year. So you can actually pull garlic mustard in the fall. You can work on it sometimes even in the winter, if there's a mild period, south-facing slopes and so forth, you can even work on it during the winter. I know that sounds just like I'm asking you to do more and more work for it, but honestly, I don't know of another solution if it's in a high-quality.
And you need to be a little careful when you're pulling it as well, don't you? Or are they?
Yeah, I mean, if you're pulling small plants and you're pulling carefully, it does have a very fleshy root. And if you just pull the top of the plant off, then of course the root is still there just to make another mature plant the next year. Otherwise, the flowering plants are the second year, and if you get the root out on that, you've prevented its reproduction. If you do it early enough, and you've gotten the root out, so you've solved a small problem there. Mm-hmm.
And do you wear gloves and so forth when you're doing it? Or?
Well, garlic mustard is not, there's no,
not a problem.
I don't
with
know
it?
Of anyone who gets irritated by handling it. If so, I would just say light gloves. I like to use light gloves on it because I like to get a good grip on that root and get it out of there.
Yeah, there you go, Robin. Thank you for calling. And Ed in Middleton up next. Hi, Ed.
Yeah. I have a question. I noticed that the cattails when I grew up were bigger, and the new European ones are skinnier. And we want to restore my brother has some restoring area there he's working on, and get rid of those and try to get the real ones in there. And if there's a way to, because I think I'm right about this, that those are not original here, the little skinny tubular ones. I don't know if you know what I'm talking about, cattails.
Yeah, there are native cattails, and there are the the invasive cattails, and then there's the hybrid cattails. So we had a garden, in fact, this rain garden that I mentioned before, that had all three of those growing together in the same place. It can be kind of hard to identify the different cattails without, until they're blooming. So that could be somewhat difficult. What I've learned about cattails is if you would like to get rid of them in an area, all you really need to do, if it's a small enough area, say small pond or wetland that you're working on there. I don't know how big your area is. You simply cut them off when they're growing. You wait until they grow again, about another 8 inches to a foot tall, cut them off again, and just repeat that several times. And that will actually weaken and kill the whole rhizomes of the cattails. And then if you have cattails that you want to grow, you simply get the seeds from them and put them into that same area. It's obviously a good cattail area, and keep an eye on them.
So yeah, that
should work for cattails.
There you go, Ed. Thank you for calling. Patrick in Madison, hi.
Hi.
What can we do for you today?
Yeah, we were talking about wildflowers, and I wanted to mention that 3 years ago I bought a duplex on the west side of Madison, and I decided I didn't like mowing the slope that much, so I put black plastic material over the grass for about 3 months and killed it off. And in November, I bought a nice wild mixture of prairie plant seed and spread it on just on the ground. I didn't do any digging or tilling or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, I had about a one-foot-tall prairie that bloomed with beginning flowers, and this year, it's 5 to 6 feet tall. I was really surprised that in 3 years' time, I had all these native plants that were really taking over, and I don't have to mow anymore. I just have a nice prairie garden back there.
Yeah, and key to that the key to your story is that you prepared the area ahead of time. So you eliminated plants that would have competed with your prairie plants. And then you got the, sounds like you got the preparation done well, and now you're on your way.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Thanks, hey. Patrick. That's a good to hear the success stories,
yep.
isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. Joe and Madison, your turn. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good afternoon. Yes, my question today is about native mosses. I've been trying to propagate a number of mosses in my back hickory grove because that's what I've got, all hickory trees growing. And the only thing I've been able to grow is mosses and the invasives that want to take over the mosses, like the Creeping Charlie, Creeping Jenny, ground
mm-hmm.
ivy.
Mm-hmm.
How can I make sure that I... How can I help propagate the mosses with all these invasives trying to jump in there and be dominant?
Well, a moss is a very short plant, and it doesn't have any vascular system, so it has to be, you know, it can't grow taller, really. So the best way, really, to maintain areas of moss is to keep other plants from shading it. I know that if you have it growing in your lawn and the lawn is in a shaded area and, you know, grass, our lawn grass doesn't like to grow in shade. So you can shift from, you can shift an area from lawn grass in a shady area to moss by simply getting the, you know, weeding the grass instead of anything else. So I think that you're, you know, weeding on that area would be helpful. Creeping Charlie is a plant that loves to grow in moist places too. So
yeah.
It would like the same areas that the moss does. Although moss is a very, once it's tight, I don't, we have an area of moss garden in the native plant garden. And once it's tight, the Creeping Charlie really doesn't go in there anymore.
Yeah, so you need to do a good job of keeping that moss growing and going and
weeding the moss.
Weeding the moss, which is a real pain.
But. Well, some people put like netting over it in the fall because, of course, fallen leaves will smother it as well. And they put the netting on and then they just pull the netting up once the leaves are down and, you know, and keep it clean that way. So you don't have to rake it or anything if you do that.
Oh,
depends on how large
cool
your
idea.
Area is.
Yeah.
Again, scale is important.
Good luck, Joe. Thank you. And Daniel in Madison, your turn. Hi.
Hi. Hey, thanks for taking my call. So I have a newly established prairie garden this year. My husband actually seeded everything last year, mm-hmm. and we had tried to kill as much of the crabgrass that was there before. But now we have crabgrass coming up with our native prairie plants. And I'm wondering, and he keeps mowing it because it's the first year. We're keeping it about 3 inches in height.
Mm-hmm.
Is there anything we can do, or do we just let this annual crabgrass duke it out with the perennials later in the year, later years?
Well, you've brought up a good point, which is that the crabgrass is an annual, so it's really coming from seed that's in, first it was in the soil, and now it's being created by the plants that are there. In the long run, the prairie plants will... the root systems will take over the soil, and there'll be less open space for crabgrass to get started. You notice that crabgrass doesn't even germinate until late in the summer. So I think that the prairie plants kind of beginning to hold that space as the years go by will help you eliminate that. At the edges, you'll probably always see some weeds. If there's edges along walkways or driveways or whatever there. Without seeing it, it's a little hard for me to know, but I think that if you're looking at your prairie planting and you're seeing dozens of small plants within a space there, like a, you know, square meter or so, if you're seeing dozens of small seedlings of prairie plants there, then I think in the long run, the prairie plants will take it over. Otherwise, I would use basically more prairie plants to crowd out the to take up the open spaces. So if you have any gaps and big openings where there aren't any prairie plants going, I would plant more plants in those areas.
There you go. Thank you so much for calling. You have coming up tomorrow an ecological restoration work party at the Curtis Prairie.
That's true. Yep, every Saturday at from 9 to 12. Throughout the nearly every Saturday throughout the year, we have work parties. So these are drop-in work parties, and volunteers can come to the Arboretum, come in this case to the Visitor Center, and meet up with the crew, and they'll be out doing doing various restoration tasks. Sometimes it's pulling garlic mustard. This time of year, I think they're working on other like shrubs that have come into the prairie. So we've talked about that a little earlier with a caller. So getting shrubs out of the prairie plantings.
And tomorrow night, you've got a full sturgeon moon night walk.
Yes. Well, the full moon is out. So every month around the time of the full moon, we have a night walk. So our naturalists meet people, and these are just drop-in free tours, and then go on a full moon adventure. Hopefully it's not cloudy.
Well, yeah, hopefully it won't be. I think it's going to be pretty nice in this part of the state tomorrow night. So,
and we've got some other things coming up. One thing in particular, a fall lecture series. So after we get into October, we'll have four lectures. The first one is Stan Temple, who's going to be coming to talk about Aldo Leopold's birding observations and the records that Leopold kept and the insights that provides us for environmental change.
And when is that?
That's coming up in October. So the first one will be October 2nd, and all that registration is online on our website.
And let's see, I was looking at, there was one other thing there that I wanted to bring up, but there are restoration work parties every week.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, one other thing I'll mention for the community is that we're doing some strategic planning at the Arboretum for our future, and we have a community survey open right now to get feedback and input from the community. So on our website, it's right there. You can click on it. It's pretty brief, and we'd really welcome people's input to that survey about the Arboretum.
So go to the UW Arboretum website. Easy for me to say. And there's a spot there where you can just
right on the front page. Yep.
Well, I tell you what, Susan, it's always fun to have you with us. Thank you so much for being with us today. We'll look forward to your next visit.
Thanks for having me.
Susan Carpenter is the Senior Outreach Specialist in the Wisconsin Native Plant Garden at the UW-Madison Arboretum. Great to have her with us, and she'll be back, and we will do that, do it all over again with her. Next week on Garden Talk, Doug Soldat will be back to talk about how you can get your turf grass ready for fall and winter. That's at 11 on Friday. New time on Saturday. Now we're at 6 Saturday mornings, and of course we're online anytime. You can go to us midnight if you want to. Coming up on Monday at 11:45, the weather guys are back to talk about what caused all the heavy rainfalls in southern Wisconsin, and I believe Bassam Shakashiri joins us as well. Hope you can join us for that, but in the meantime, stay with us. Lots more in store here on the Ideas Network.